the second chapter in Brachot. Okay, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph.
Thank you.
All right, the Mishnah begins by speaking about the idea of Kavanah. In other words, if you have the intention, you Yetzer, you have fulfilled the obligation. But obviously, the negative aspect would be if you don't have the intention, then you don't fulfill. Okay? So the Mishnah begins by saying, Hoyakore by Torah, if a person happened to be reading the Torah, the Higiyas Manabikran, the time came to read, in this case, greet Krishna, obviously. So im kivein libay yotza, then in that case the Mishnah says, if his intention was taka to fulfill the mitzvah of reciting Krishna by means of his reading, then in that case he has fulfilled it. But we have to, of course, assume that if he didn't, then in that particular case he was not. He did not fulfill his obligation to recite. And we'll go over again several of the Tosfos on the page and see how Rashi and Tosfos understand this. Okay? Alright, now the second part of the Mishnah, as I said, deals with when are we permitted to interrupt and when are we not permitted to interrupt. And David wanted to put it to practical use last week.
Right. I want you to know that with someone, I spoke to you, it was not just call Hazam, but someone's wish I wanted to give the call.
I understand. I was very flattered, David. Thank you very much. Yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah continues by saying, Bab Prokim, which in this case over here means, and the various places, the various breaks where one paragraph comes together with another one, then in that particular case, Shoel Nifnei HaKavod Demeshiv, if a person wants to show honor to someone, so he can greet him, that's if he's at one of the juncture points, Umeshiv, or if the other person greets him, and again, you know, it's a person to whom he wants to show respect, he is permitted to answer. Uve emtza, what if he happens to be, however, in the middle of either one of the brachas preceding the Shema, or in the Shema Yisrael itself, in the middle of one of the paragraphs? So, if he sees someone, shoel mipnei hayira, if he sees someone from whom he is afraid, for whatever reason it may be, as I say, it may be a physical fear of this particular person. He may feel that if this person, you know, has the power of life and death over him. So in that particular case, he's permitted to interrupt if he has that feeling towards this particular person.
Like your boss.
Yeah, well, like your boss, okay. Okay. Who makes you? And also, you're permitted to interrupt in the middle of one of the paragraphs, also mipnei hayira, if you are deathly afraid of that person. This is Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda happens to disagree with Rabbi Meir. He's a little bit more lenient. He says, be emtsa, yeah, talk in the middle of one of these things, shoel mipnei hayira. You can only interrupt to greet someone if you're afraid of that person, but umeshiv mipnei hakavod, if it's a person whom you want to show honor, so if he says hello to you and he greets you, then you can interrupt in the middle of the Shema in order to say hello to him, say shalom to him. Uvaprokim, and if you happen to be at one of the breaks, then in that case, show him if they have kovot. You can greet that person whom you want to honor. Umeishiv shalom cholodom, and anybody who interrupts you in the middle and says hello to you, you're permitted to answer. This is what Rabbi Yehuda says. Okay?
This is in the middle of any prayer or just
in the middle of the Krishna or in the middle of the Bracha? Right. This is what we're talking. We're talking specifically right now about the Shema and its preceding Brachas and the Bracha afterwards. Okay? But in spite of the fact that what Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, you know, happens to be accepted as halacha according to the Shulchan Aruch, nevertheless, I have to tell you there's an extremely strong sentiment against it. As you're aware, I'm sure, the real sentiment is that we should not interrupt the minute that we start Baruch Shri Yomar until the time that we finish reciting the Shemin Esrei. We should not interrupt. Yes.
From Baruch Hu all the way to the Yemesh?
Well, from Baruch Hu there's no question. But as I say, even more.
So,
right. From beginning with Baruch Shayomar In other words, really it extends the amount of time that you should not be. Right, from Borshi Yomar on to Borku. So now I'll tell you a maisa with my brother-in-law. I have a brother-in-law, he's a Bayana Chassid. So,
what is that?
Bayan or Chassid, this way. Never heard of Bayan or Chassid?
No, where are they located?
Where are they from?
The Bayaner was, he came from Galicia. And then afterwards he spent many years, first in Vienna and then in New York, until he was Nifter a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Okay? And it was one of the most distinguished of the Rebbes. Okay? As far as his, you know, Hasidic rabbis always, you know, they look back to from whom they stammed, as we say. In other words, who was their ancestor, the Yichus, and so on and so forth. So he happened to be from the Regina.
Okay. Regina, I know.
Yeah, okay.
I know.
My uncle was
okay, so Regina, right. So the Bayana was one of the offshoots of the Regina dynasty. Okay. Okay, there was a very famous Rabbi Yisrael of Regin. He lived in a town called Regin, someplace probably in Galicia, wherever it may be. And he founded a dynasty of, Rebbeim, Tzaddikim, and so on and so forth. And whatever town they settled in, so they took on the name for the town. So someone settled in Bayan. Bayon, Bayan, I don't know. Anyway, it's not like Bayon in New Jersey or in France, okay? But Bayon, someplace in Galicia. And this happened to be a very, very distinguished rabbi, I have to tell you. I mean, he was a very, very, very choshever person. He was one of the founders of the Agudas Yisrael and things like that. So my brother-in-law, Nehemiah, is a Bayan Chosid, and so is his son and several of his sons-in-law. You know, or Bayara Chassid. Okay? From time to time, I went to Davin, with my brother in law. Thought we would visit and spend the Shabbos over there. So naturally, we Davin in the Shtibu where we Davin's. Okay? So I said to him one time, I said, Nehemiah, how come, the Chassidim push off, Baruch Sheyomar on Shabbos until after they said, not sure the Psuke de Zimra? And then they first say Baruch Sheyomar, whereas we say Baruch Sheyomar right at the beginning of the Pesukim de Zimra and Fartik and so.
What
they
call it?
The Nusach Sfard they call it. Yeah. Now Nusach Sfard, I have to tell you, is not the same identical with Nusach Ari, although there are many points of resemblance. Okay, but Nusach Sfard is what practically all the Chassidim daven. With the exception, as I say, of the Lubavitcher. The Lubavitcher Davin Nusach Ari, and the Siddur is a little bit different from the Nusach Sfar Siddur, okay? And of course, Nusach Sfar doesn't mean Spanish Portuguese either. Even though it sounds like it, but it's not, okay? At any rate, so I asked him this question, how come you do it? He says, what do you mean? He says, like this. We can talk as long as we want until we come to Baruch
Sheyomar. So they change the format to sit
But beginning with Baruch Sheyomar, even the Chemia wouldn't talk in the Shtibel until after Shemoneh Esrei. Yes.
When you say chassid, what does the word chassid mean?
Chassid means literally pious. Someone who does acts of chesed, right? Or chesed, right.
So what does Ashkenaz mean?
Ashkenaz means literally, that was the name that was given to Germany, according to tradition. And so therefore the Ashkenazim were the Jews who first settled in Germany or in France, along the Rhineland area over there, France. So they were called Ashkenazim, okay? And then, of course, as time went on, due to persecutions and due to the fact that whatever it may be, they spread eastward, to Poland and Russia and things like that and so on. So they were the Ashkenazim. These terms are not altogether 100% because you have to realize that technically the Polish Yidden are also, and the Galicianer and the Ukrainer, etc., etc., they are also really Ashkenazic Jews because they follow the Ashkenazic that they are part of the Ashkenazic ethnic background. But since the time of the start of the Hasidic movement, one of the changes that was made by the Hasidim is to go back. Originally, I think they had in mind to go back to the Nusachari, but it's not 100% Nusachari, as I said. And instead, you know, they develop what they call Nusach Sfard. So if you take a look at a Nusach Sfard Siddur, you'll see that in many respects it still looks like a Nusach Ashkenaz Siddur, but in other respects it looks like a Nusach Hari Siddur. So it's sort of a combination of that. Well, I don't want to say that. I mean, look, after all, a movement that's been in existence for close to 300 years, and, you know, which has produced so much, I had the greatest respect for the Hasidim, even if I personally am not from that type of a background. Yeah.
What is the term Misnaged?
Okay.
And where did that come from?
Misnaged means opponent. Okay? This was the name that was given by the Hasidim to those who opposed the Hasidic movement. They called them the Misnagdim. And the term stuck. So that practically all the Jews in Litta were Misnagdim. Okay? They followed the Ashkenazic ritual. Okay? But because of the fact that there was a great deal of opposition in Lithuania on the part of most of the Lithuanian Jews to the Hasidic movement, so they were given the title of Misnagdim by the Hasidim, as I say. This is how we know them. Now, when we talk about the conflict between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim, so it's this conflict that we're talking about.
We're talking about the people only in Lithuania as opposed to general European.
Well, in addition to Lithuania, you had, for example, White Russia, which was more also inclined towards the Litvish type as opposed to the Hasidic type. As I say, more, because even in Lithuania you had a handful of Hasidim, and in White Russia you had a little bit more of the Hasidim.
Does it imply that one is more pious than the other?
Yeah, the Hasidim felt that they were more pious. They still do. They still do. Well, look, you know, if you talk to Hasidim, you know, they give you the impression that they're very, very careful. I mean, they're more immersed in the Torah, in the study of Torah than the Misnagdim, which is not necessarily so. You understand? They have more minhagim that they observe than the Misnagdim. In many cases, maybe some of these things were even based on superstitions or whatever it may be.
Not
but the fact is that the... Pardon me?
Not necessarily halachic.
No, not so. No, when I talk about minhagim, they're not necessarily halacha at all. But, you know, they stick to certain customs that they had. But there are also other differences. I mean, one of the big differences is that the Hasidim, all of them, acknowledge various rebbeim. And in the Hasidic theology, so to speak, the Rebbe is sort of like an intermediary between the chosid, in other words, the follower in this particular case, and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Whereas among the Misnagdim, our feeling is that everybody can get close to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam through prayer, through tshuva, etc. You know.
Almost like the priest in his parish.
Yeah.
He's the intermediary for that.
Yeah, correct.
Can I just ask a
question?
What is Nusach Hari?
Okay. Nusach Hari, this originally was something which was started in Safat by the Ari HaKadosh, that's Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, okay? Back around the 15th century or the 16th century. And he patterned his siddur a little bit more towards, I mean, the way the Sfaradim, you know, of, let's say, the Portuguese, the Spanish Jews, you know, were adopting, okay? So he made up the siddur. And the Misnagdim, Misnagdim never accepted it because they daven the kind, you know, the way we daven in the Siddur over here. This is a Misnagdish davening, if you wish. Or we call it Nusach Ashkenaz. I mean, this is the way we call it, okay? So we daven Nusach Ashkenaz. The Hasidim adopted, as I told you, the Nusach Sfard. That became the Nusach practically in every in every Hasidic shtibble that you go to, you'll find that they daven Lusav Svar. But when Chabad came on the scene, and they weren't the first among the Hasidim, you realize, because you had the Baal Shem Tov, then you had the Baal Shem Tov's immediate successors, such as, for example, Rabbi Yankov Yosef of Polnoa, and Reb Dov of Mezrich, the Mezrich of Magid, and Reb Nachman of Bratslav, and so on, who happened to be an enikel of the Baal Shem Tov himself. And then, finally, you see, you have a rising upon the scene of history, you have Reb Shneur Zalman of Yadi, okay? He was the founder of the Chabad movement. Now, he founded it, one of the reasons why he founded it is because he felt that there was a certain neglect of Torah study among the previous Hasidic sects, that the emphasis had been so much upon emotion, song, dancing, and so on, that, you know, the emphasis had been taken away from Torah study. So he wanted to stress the idea that you have to have, you know, chokhma, bino, das. In other words, you have to study Torah and so on together with it, and he put the emphasis upon that, in addition with the others. So that, to a certain extent, the Chabad movement was sort of a little bit more sober in comparison to some of the other Hasidic movements. Now, one of the changes that he made is to go back to adopt the Nusach Ari as the official Nusach of the Chabad movement, and so it is to this day. That all the Siddurim, you know, that they turn out at 77 and 770 Eastern Parkway, or in Kfar Chabad in Eretz Israel, you know, follows the Nusach Ari.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, we're all Jews. So you go to Eretz Israel and you come across real Jews who come, you know, from Oriental countries and so on and so forth, you'll see that they also have different mishchos that they use in order to daven. They daven according to the Nusach B'nei Eidot HaMizrach. This is the, and you know, many of the words in Shmon Esra are different from the way we are, or they add here, add there, and things like that. They add, they subtract, whatever it may be. More adding than subtracting. Yeah. So, but the point is, Zay Zayn and Eden, Mir Zayn and Eden, and, right. And halabai that we would all work together for the strengthening of Yiddishkeit. This is the most important thing. All right. So, getting back over here to our Mishnah. All right, so Rabbi Meir, as we see, was strict. He says that if it's Mipnei Hayira, then in that particular case, you are permitted to interrupt in the middle, actually, of one of the brachas or one of the paragraphs of the Shema, but otherwise, by prokim, you are permitted to greet someone Mipnei HaKavod, okay? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is more liberal in his interpretation. He says in this particular case that in the middle of the paragraph, okay, yes, you can only greet one if you're afraid of that person, but if you want to honor someone, you can even interrupt in order to reply to someone who has greeted you. Uvat prokim, but when you come to one of the juncture points, then you're permitted even to be the one to greet the person, show up they are covered, if you want to honor that person. And if somebody, whoever it may be, you know, says hello to you, you're permitted to interrupt the Meshiv Shalom L'chol Adam. You're permitted to answer that person. And then, of course, the Mishnah defines, what do we mean by Bein HaProkim? Elohim Bein HaProkim. This is what we mean by Bein HaProkim. Bein Brocha Rishon Adishniyo. In other words, between Yotzeror and Ahava Rabo or Ahava Seidem, if it's the night time, Bein Shniyo Lishma, right, between Ahava Seidem or Ahava Rabo and Shema Yisrael, Bein Shema Le V'Hoyo Im Shemoa, Bein V'Hoyo Im Shemoa Le V'Yomer, and finally Bein V'Yomer Le Emes B'Yatziv. But this last Mishnah, the last statement in the Mishnah, that, you know, a juncture point is between Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor, and then Emes, you know, Emes B'Yatziv, and so on, is beginning naturally the bracha afterwards, and therefore, theoretically, you should be able to interrupt according to this Mishnah. But Rabbi Yehuda demurs. He says, Yeah, let's see, where am I right now? Yeah, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Bein Vayomer, Liyem is V'yatzev Liyatzev. He says, no, you do not interrupt between Vayomer and Emes V'yatzev. And of course, we follow that opinion, I don't have to tell you. Because, as you are aware, what do we say? Hashem L'keichem, Emes, right? Okay. Then, Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha. Now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha wants to explain why, even if we were to take a look at the Torah, at the Chumash, and see that the Parshiyos or the Shema are scattered in different places. One of them, I mean, Shema V'Hoyim Shema, this is chapter 6 of Devarim, okay? Vayomer is Yud Aleph in Devarim. And then when you come to Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor, this is part of Bamidbar, the end of Parsha Shlach. So in other words, the paragraphs of the Shema are not exactly in the order in which the Torah has put them. So why the reason for the order of these paragraphs? This is what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Kocha wants to explain. So he says, there's a good reason for it. He says, Lomo Kodmo Pasha Shema Levehoyim Shema. First of all, why does the paragraph Shema Yisrael precede Vehoyim Shema? So the answer is, Kedei Sheyikabel Olav Ol Malchu Shemaim Techilo. The reason being that first you accept upon yourself the yoke of the kingdom of heaven. In other words, first acknowledge God as your king, as your sovereign, and you express your love for God, the Yachakach, the Kabbalah of all mitzvahs. And then after that, you accept upon yourself the various mitzvahs that are enumerated in the second paragraph of the Shema, such as, V'limaritem osam espenechem ledaber bam, teach your children, and so on, in order to speak of them. Apparently, the feeling is, as you notice, that even though the first paragraph says v'dibarta bom, right, v'shinantam v'nech v'dibarta bom, they don't take it really as an actual mitzvah asay, so to speak. You know, it's an affirmative commandment to teach. Instead, where do they derive the affirmative commandment for teaching Torah? The answer is v'dibartem osam v'nechem v'dibarta bom. This is where they do it. Okay. So, since where is the actual mitzvah mentioned? The actual mitzvah is mentioned in the second paragraph. So the first paragraph is, first, we acknowledge God as our king and we are willing to accept our commitments to him. And so in the second paragraph, we have a commitment mentioned, namely the study of Torah and the teaching of Torah. Okay? All right. Now the question is, why V'hoyim Shema leVayomer? Why does V'hoyim Shema come before Vayomer? So he says, She'v'hoyim Shema noheg bein Vayomer v'melayla. The mitzvah that we've just mentioned, namely of teaching Torah, of learning Torah, this applies day and night. I mean, we know that it's written, you know, V'hogisa Vayom v'layla. We find that in the first chapter of Yehoshua. Study it. Study the Word of God day and night and so on. Okay? So this mitzvah is for all times, day and night, whereas Vayomer ainu noheg ela Vayom bilvad. Whereas the mitzvah that we find mentioned in Vayomer, namely the mitzvah tzitzis, this applies only to the day, and we've already discussed that. We mentioned the fact last week, of course not everybody was here last week, but we mentioned the fact that the mitzvah of tzitzis is not a mitzvah, as we would say, a mitzvah saguf. It's not a mitzvah that involves the body of a human being. Instead, it's mitzvah habeget. It is a mitzvah where, right, the article of clothing is of that nature that it requires that tzitzis be put upon it, okay? So if you have a four-cornered garment, you are required to put tzitzis on it. If you don't have a four-cornered garment, then in that case you're not required to put tzitzis on it. So that's one aspect of the mitzvah tzitzis. And the other one is that because it's written over Isem also, you shall see it. So therefore, from this, the rabbis infer that it means that it's a mitzvah which applies to daytime, where every person can see it clearly. Whereas at night, where the only way you could see it would be with artificial light, therefore it would not apply. And therefore they say that a garment which is a kesus laila, a garment to be worn only at night, does not require the wearing of tzitzis. And of course, this is the basic reason why, for example, at Maariv time, we certainly do not wear a talis. Naturally, if we're wearing tzitzis, we're not going to go and take off the tzitzis just because it became night. I mean, we'll wear it until the time we're ready to take off our clothes and go to bed. But if you would have to take off the, let's say you're all sweated up, right? The compass is all sweated and everything else. Let's say you wanted to change your clothing because of that, okay? It's a hot summer night, etc., etc., okay? Are you required to put on tzitzis again? The answer is no. You're not required because once it's night, the obligation is no longer there. So,
yes. Isn't it odd that you put on a talis to mitzvah, you don't say the Shema,
right?
The Maariv,
correct.
You don't have the tzitzis on.
You're absolutely right, but the answer is, I mean, because the wearing of the tzitzis depends on the third paragraph of the Shema.
Right.
And as we learned, the third paragraph of the, you know, the ending of the previous chapter, there was a discussion whether we are really required to do it, okay? And we said yes. Maskirin Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos, right? But why? What justification do they have for saying it? And so the answer is right. It's Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is the reason why we're reciting the third paragraph of the Shema, but not for the reason of the tzitzis, which is not operative at night. So this is what we learned. And all right, we'll take a look at the Rashi, we'll take a look at Tosfos and continue. Okay, Rashi first of all, Hoyakori Bator. I'll go right in order over there. So Rashi explains Parshas Krishna. I mean, what is he reading in the Torah? The answer is this applies only if we're talking about a person who is reading the Parsha of Krishna, and the Higia Zman Adikwa Zman Krishna. In other words, the time has come to read Krishna. So Rashi is explaining what the words mean over there. And then he says, Paprokim. What do we mean by prokim? He says, Bein ha-hafsakos. It's a good Hebrew word even today. I mean, not only was it good for Rashi, it's good in modern Hebrew too. A hafsaka means a pause, literally. Pause. Pause.
Pause.
Pause. Right.
They're making a
right.
Reading, and you're making a pausing.
Right, right. These are the pauses. Well, the common Torah Shlahu means this, and afterwards the Mishnah explains what they are. It's Bein. Brocha Rishonu Lishneo, between the first Brocha to the second one, Menchtin Lishma, etc., etc. Okay? So, Rashi now defines, what do we mean by Shawel Ibn HaKobot? So, Shawel Bishlom Odom Nichbod, Shera'ui Lahakim Lishalom. If you meet, if a person happens to come in, who you have to honor because he deserves to be honored, then in that case, greet him first. Interesting what Rashi says. Doesn't say, don't greet him, right? But he says, greet him first. Ra'ui lahakim lo shalom. It's worthwhile, it's worthy, it's right to that you should be the first, you know, to say hello to him. And naturally, if he says first to you, then in meshiv, shalom. You answer, you say shalom, right? Im hikdimo lo, if, you know, they preceded him. Uvigmora porech. And the Gemara is going to ask the question, Kevin de Shoel, if you already give permission to a person to say hello, right, that is to say hello to someone, to be the first one to say, so Pshita de Meshav, all the more reason that you should give a person permission to reply. After all, you weren't the first one to do it. So the Gemara is going to ask that question. Uve Emtsa. And Rashi explains, Be'emsa brocha parsha, either in the middle of one of the brachas or the middle of the parsha, you know, a parsha of Shema. So then, what does he say? He says, Be'pnei ha'yira. Odom shu yori miponav, shelo yahargu. A person of whom you're afraid that that person will kill you if you don't greet them. Avol mipnei ha'kovod, lo. But according to Rab Meir, simply to show honor to someone, you don't interrupt in the middle of a bracha, in the middle of a paragraph, to greet that person. But Rabbi Yehuda, you know, he disagrees. So Rashi says, "Bigmorah forish poptayu." In the Gemara, they will explain what is the reason for the difference of opinion between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Bein vayom leyemes v'yasev layasek. This is what Rabbi Yehuda again said. He said that between vayomer and emes v'yatsev, you do not interrupt. And the Gemara Meforish Tamaya. The Gemara again will explain what is the reason for it. All right. Then we said, you know, why did one precede the other? So we said that Shema Yimakabel Alav Ol Malchus Shemayim. This we understand. And then we said, why Vayomer? Why does that have to precede? Why does Vahoyim Shema precede Vayomer? So we say the answer is because the Hoyim Shemoa Noheg Bein Vayomer Bein Malaylo. The mitzvahs that we have, you know, that mitzvah applies both day and night, the Mishnoi, because we're talking about Talmud Torah. Dichsiv, as it is written, v'limadetem osam esbeneichem. That's the mitzvah that we learn from the second paragraph of the Shema. Whereas, vayomer eino noheg vayom, vayomer only applies during the day, the Mishnoi b'tzitzis. Talking about tzitzis, it applies to tzitzis. She'eino noheges elo vayom, which the mitzvah of tzitzis applies only during the day, dichsiv ureisem asel, and since it says ureisem, you shall see it, so it's prat, this excludes l'chsus lailo, garment which is meant only to be worn at night. So that even if you were to wear a four-cornered garment as, let's say a nightgown, right, then in that particular case, that garment is does not require any tzitzis on it. You know, wouldn't put tzitzis on it because it's meant only as a nightgown and it wouldn't apply. All right. Let's take a look, first of all, now at some of the tosfos that we have over here. All right. The first tosfos on top speaks about Hoya Kore, right? They start with the Mishnah and it says, Im Kiven Libo Yotza, right? If he had the intention of reading the Shema, then he is Yotze. But if not, no. So the problem that Tosfos there addresses the fact that Yerushalmi, that in Yerushalmi Amrinon, they say that the brochos einon miyaklos. The implication then is simply that, all right, you're reading Torah. You're reading the Torah at the time. And lo and behold, what are you reading? You're reading Shema Yisrael, okay? Now, in that particular case, you haven't made the brocha, which should be said before the Shema. Before the Shema, you should say Yotzeror, you should say Abba Rabba, and here, if you're just reading, so in that particular case, the assumption then that the Rishonim makes is that you do not, that in other words, the recital of the Shema itself is not altogether dependent upon the brachas, that you could recite the Shema even without having recited the brachas before. Because even though you have not recited the two brachas before and the two brachas after, because the two brachas after that would be at night, because in the daytime there's only one bracha in the morning. Okay? Yotza. Nevertheless, you have fulfilled the obligation, Yim Kain, because if this weren't so, Tikshe, my Mahani. The Kasha would then be, how does it help him, Kivein Libo? You know, if he intended. How could you say, that in Kivein Libo he was Yotze if he had yet made the bracha beforehand? So therefore, says the Rishonim, hence, ergo, right, we conclude that the brachas einon ma'aklos, that they do not hinder the performance of this mitzvah you didn't recite it. The Yim Tomar, and now Tosfos says, and if you give the following argument, just the page back, we learn that Maskin and Seder Brochus and Miyakris, that the order of the Brochus, in other words, there we were learning that there's a possibility, maybe, that they would say first Abba Rabba, and then afterwards, when it got daylight, they would say Yotzeror, right? So there we said Seder Brochus and Miyakros. And so we came to the conclusion there that the order in which we recite these two brachos would not be a hindrance to the fulfillment of the mitzvah. But says Tosfos, nevertheless, they were only talking about the Seder, the order in which we recite the brachos. But ha brachos miyakos. Nevertheless, if you didn't say the brachos at all, then you should not. You shouldn't consider that you have fulfilled your duty of reciting Krishna. So the Yeshleimah, so in answer to that, says Taisa, well, the Hosam Ayre B'tiba. There, we happen to be talking about what was the case of the Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdosh and, the people who came in order to attend the service on the Beis HaMikdosh. So there it was different. And you know, the proof of this is the fact that that particular citation that they used, it says, you know, that the Cohen who was in charge said unto them, and so on. So in other words, what Tespis is saying is, well, that was an exceptional case, but don't draw a generalization from what we had on the previous one, and decide that even if the Seder Baruch is Einam Yaklos, right, but nevertheless, there's no question that you should say brachas beforehand. That's the right way. All right. Now, the Gemara, Tosfos continues. The Emtza Shom Epnei. All right. It says that in the middle, you're permitted, you know, to ask someone. Let's say Mipnei Hayura. That was the first opinion we had. And then afterwards, Rabbi Yehuda said, you know, that Mipnei Hayura, you're permitted, but Mipnei Hakovod, you don't. However, you are permitted what? To answer someone if they are covered. This is what he said. Okay? What Rabbi Yehuda said. So, first of Rabbeinu Shmaya. Rabbeinu Shmaya was, I don't know, must have been a pal of the Tosafists over there. Probably lived in a very fine place in France. Okay? We don't know anything more about who this Rabbeinu Shmaya is. But he was one of the Tosafists. Okay? So, first of Rabbeinu Shmaya, Rabbeinu Shmaya, Paskin the Mekom Sha'osala Saper Osala Daber. His psak is that wherever it is prohibited to engage in conversation, that's what it means by Osala Saper, then in that case, Osala Daber Apilab Shadai Kodesh. You're not allowed to even speak in Hebrew. In other words, there were those who said, okay, in the middle of davening, let's say, you can interrupt, provided that you do it in Hebrew, but not to do it, you know, in French or in Yiddish or in English or something like that. That would be so. Rabbeinu Ishmael gave a psak that where it is prohibited to interrupt with conversation, it wouldn't make any difference what language it is. You're not allowed to do it in Hebrew either. V'chein mashba mitoch basnisan, and this is the general idea that we can derive from our Mishnah as well. Uvirushalmi komar. And the Yerushalmi, which had, of course, its own interpretation of this Mishnah, so there they said, "Afilu bi emtza ha-posuk," even in the middle of a posuk in the Shema, Rav Huna b'shem Rav Yosef Omar, Rav Huna said in the name of Rav Yosef, "V'dibarta bo," it's written, "V'dibarta bo," you're permitted to speak of them. So in other words, he says, hey, according to the Rishalmi, you're permitted to, you're permitted to even talk in the middle of the
Shema. Yeah, taking it out of context.
Right. But it's interesting.
Bomb?
Yeah.
What does he mean by bomb? Oh, all right.
What does he mean by what?
By bomb. Bomb.
It's the
bomb, yeah.
Bomb!
Right.
Bomb.
Bomb. If
and
it says the Gaber bum, it means you can permit it to talk in them. In them means in the middle of reciting
with that.
One of the Pasukim in the Shema Yisrael. This is how he interprets it. Okay? The Hainu Name, and likewise, he says we have somebody else who comes along with a similar idea. Damrin the Perakamu de Yama, the Perakamu de Yama, that in the first chapter of Yomor, they say, Vidibarta bum. That you're permitted to talk in them, but not in the middle of what? In the middle of Shemin Esra. Tefillah Shemin Esra. In other words, in the middle of Krishma, yes, but in the middle of Shemin Esra, you're not allowed to talk in them. Perish ain't mishivin bo mipnei Yaakovot. The answer is that mipnei Yaakovot, you know, in other words, in the middle of Shemin Esra, you're not allowed to interrupt. But in the middle of the Shema, so it's written with the bar to bomb, so therefore it means, yeah, you can take a little liberty. I don't recommend it, I have to tell you. We should really have kavana when we say the entire Shema, but as we'll see, and Yetzah Hashem, there are differences of opinion as to how far kavana goes even in the Shema itself. Okay? Okay. All right, so let's get on with the Gemara now. Yeah. Shema minor. So, from the Mishnah, we see what? That mitzvahs richas kavanah, right? That mitzvahs require that you should have the intention of performing them. Otherwise, what? It's not a mitzvah, right? How do we know that? Well, because it says, im kivein libo, right? So they say, mayim kivein libo likros. What does it mean when it says, quotation marks, if his intention was to read, it says Likros, the guy is reading. Or Kokori, isn't he reading? So they say Bekori Lahagia. The only kind of a case that the Gemara can figure out where a person is simply reading, and then he would have to have the intention of saying Shema, and not simply reading, would be if he's doing it simply to check the spelling of words in the Sefer Torah. Well, let's take a look at Rashi, okay? Shema Minoi says, Mitzvah Tzviches Kavono, Sheyehe Miskaven L'Shem Mitzvah. We see then that the basic idea of Mitzvah Tzviches Kavono means that you have to have the intention that you want to fulfill the mitzvah properly. This is what we mean by that. This is what we mean by kavana. You want to fulfill the mitzvah properly. And you have it on your mind that you want to do it with all your heart and with all yourself. So, he says, B'tikshel Rabba, this is, however, a kasha on Rabba, the Omar b'Maseches Rosh Hashanah, who said in the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah, Hatokei Alishir Yotza, that if a person is blowing shofar just because he likes the musical sounds, and let's see, he happened to sound out a tekiyah, a shvorim, a trua, a tekiyah. Then in that particular case, yotza. Even if his original text was just to play for amusement, his own amusement, but automatically by sounding the right sounds, so he is yotzi. So if we apply Rabba's opinion over here, then we would say that even if the guy is reading in a Sefer Torah or in a Chumash or something like that, and he's reading the Krishna, even if his intention was not right, then the implication would be that he would be Yotze, right? So how can we consider a case, where would be a case that as a result of his reading he still has to have the intention, otherwise he's not Yotze? So this is what Rashi wants to speak of. So it's Kivein Likros. Right? He has to have the kavana to read. Avolot say sidei mitzvah lo be'inun shehem iskavein ele kreis b'torah b'yalma. Alright. So, first of all, what he says, that you should have intention. But, in order to fulfill the mitzvah, we do not require sheyehem iskavein, that you have to have the intention. So, in other words, Rashi is saying over here that in accordance with how Rabba understood the fact that you've done the right things mechanically, automatically you're already getting the credit for having fulfilled it. Okay? Ela dekros b'Torah b'Yalma, but only to read, you know, it's like reading the Torah. So they say, but Hokokori, look, he's reading. Or b'Kori Kosik, after all, talking about someone who's actually reading from the Torah. Right? Kosik Tana. So the Osi, the Kotoni, Hoyakori Batorah. So why does the Tana come and say he was reading the Torah? So the Gemara comes up with the solution and says, Bekori Lahagia. What is he reading the Torah for? He's not reading the Torah with the intention of fulfilling the Krishna, but it's only Lahagia Sasefer. He's checking out a Sefer Torah. That's what he's doing. He's checking out the Sefer Torah. And as Rashi explains, im yesh bo tos, he wants to find out if maybe there's a mistake in it. Da'atilu dekriyo nami lo miskavin. Because in that case, he didn't even have the intention of reading the Torah. In other words, it wasn't an exercise of Torah on his part, but it was only an exercise in what? In checking the Sefer Torah to see whether the spelling was right, whether the ink had eroded or whatever it may be. But he didn't have the intention at that time either of learning Torah or of reciting Shema.
I have to say at this point I'm a little confused, because I remember a discussion of not only do you not have,
which is incidentally a contradiction to the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says specifically, right, Vashacha mevorech shneim panecha v'yachas achrecha. And then
not have to have the kavana of saying the Shema, that is also not necessary. You only have to have the kavana to read the Torah. Is that correct?
Correct. This is what he's saying over here, that if you have the kavana to read the Torah, so automatically it could be counted for reciting the Krishna. This is what he's saying. Correct. But needless to say, I don't have to tell you that, you know, it contradicts what we've learned before in the Mishnah. So the answer is, you know, that the bracha is lo miyakos, that the bracha is the fact that you omitted the brachas, you know, doesn't prevent you from fulfilling the mitzvah of reading Krishna. So, no, okay. You have to say always that in many cases in Jewish law, we have a concept of what we call lechatchila, what is your intention to begin with, and then we have what we call b'diavad. In other words, if you did something, can it be counted as if, okay, in retrospect or retroactively, you know, you have fulfilled the obligation and it's all right? B'diavad. B'diavad. One is lechatchila, to begin with, and the other one is b'diavad. B'diavad Saramaic, which means, and if it has, if you've done it, if you've done an action, then in that case we accept it as, you know, okay. You've done something, I mean, that still counts, you know, as a mitzvah or whatever it may be, okay? In kashrus, for example, lechatchila, we should not accept this and this, but b'diavad, if we accepted it, it's all right. Provided, of course, it's not an actual iser, you see. Not talking about something which is absolutely prohibited, but you know, there are borderline cases, okay? And this idea of the chatchila and b'diavad occurs in many cases over and over and over again. So, the chatchila, to begin with, when we daven, when we want to say Krishna, when there's no question, in other words, that what? We have to recite the two brachas before, and we have to have kavana when we recite the Shema Yisrael, that we want to actually turn to our Father in heaven and be mekabel ol malchus shemayim upon ourselves, right? And then as we go along, we want to also accept the ol mitzvos, which after all, the consequence of accepting God is also that we want to express this in terms, you know, of accomplishment, right? Mitzvos, you understand? Well, so this is lechatchila. But what would happen if a person happened to be in a circumstance where he happened to say the right words, even if the kavana was not there to begin with? Would we accept it b'diavad? Yes. Would we accept it even if he hadn't said the brachas? B'diavad? Yes. You see, this is all that we're saying at this particular point.
Say that again. We would accept it b'diavad if he didn't say the brachas.
Right.
And also b'diavad if he did not have...
He didn't have the right kavana, right? He was just saying it mechanically or something like that, you know.
When you use this b'diavad, do you then have the implication that just by saying mechanically the Shema, that that person somehow,
he's fulfilling something,
had the kavana actually to say the Shema?
Okay, so we interpret it for his benefit, all right? We'd say, yes, ultimately, right, that he still had the right intention, even though it was not performed the right way, okay?
So he actually had the intention to say that.
Right, yeah. I mean, we all know that when we daven, our davening isn't always in the highest
sort of a constructive
quality,
intent,
you know,
right?
Yeah.
In constructive intent.
Right, yeah. But there are many things, as I say, that b'diavad we accept, even though lechatchila, this is not the way it should be done. It should be done with fear and trembling, etc., you know, with the desire to...
B'diavad, is that with an aleph?
No. Spelled beis, dalet, yud, ayin, beis, dalet. You see, it means b'diavad, but in the fact that he did it, has already done it, you understand? Avad, you know, avad, he did it. He did the maisa, you understand?
Oh, you mean obeyed, alright.
Obeyed, right, okay. B'diavad. In Aramaic, you know, it means that if he did it, right? So in that case, we accept it b'diavad, you see. It's pronounced, we pronounce it b'diavad. Others pronounce it a little more exactly b'diavad, okay? Which would... undoubtedly, grammatically, it makes more sense. Ayin beis dalet. No, ayin beis dalet. Right. Right. All right. Now, we've heard what Rashi has to say over here. Let's take a look at Tosfos at this particular point. The third Tosfos on the page, Vekori Lahagia. So he says, Perish Bakuntras, Rashi explains, whenever you use the term Bakuntras, remember that means Rashi's commentary. Of course, the word Kuntras itself is originally, you know, it's like a corruption from the word commentarius in Latin, which means commentary. Okay? So it says, Perish Bakuntras, and Rashi's commentary, it's written, She'ein miskavin likreis, that his intention was not to read Torah. Says Timur. I'm surprised, he says, Akati Hokokori, after all, he is reading, right? So how can he come to that? So Al Kain, therefore, he says, Nire Bikori Lahagia. That's why we have to come to the conclusion that we're only talking about someone who is reading, not with the intention of reading Torah, but simply a cursory type of a reading in order to check the text. Che'eno Kore Hatevos Kilchoson Ukimlason. He's not reading the words kehil choson, either according to the way they should be read, the chinekudoson, or according to their voweling. Okay? In other words, he's just doing an extremely cursory job. For what reason? Elo kechsivason kore. He's only reading it just to check on the spelling, that's all. Kedei lohovin, in order to see, bechaseros, to be a seros, to see where the word has to be spelled in a fuller way and where the word is spelled in a more condensed or more concise way. What do we mean by chaseros and yeseros? It means specifically, as a general rule, for example, is there a yud there? Is there a vav there? Or something like that. But he gives an example. Kimo, how do you read the next word? The totafos, right. But you notice that in the last,
there's no
vav over there at the end, right? Or how about the next one? The answer is al-mezuzos u-mezuzos, or al-mezuzos be-secha, right? So he's checking to see whether the word is written without a vav or with a vav, okay? Ve'yim kiven libay is lav davka. And therefore, when the Gemara, when the Mishnah mentions im kivein liboy, if he had every intention, so it's not this type of reading just to see whether it's spelled with above or without above, but it means to read kedin, that he wants to read the way it should be read. In other words, he wants to fulfill the reading of the passage exactly the way it should be done, with the trop, with the right punctuation, etc., etc. Okay, so that is kivein libo. But if he didn't do that, if he's just taking a look at some text just to check whether there's above there or not above, so that's not either reading Torah with the intention of reading Torah, or is it reading Krishna? That's the idea that Tosfos is telling us. All right. Having said that, we now continue with the Gemara. Tana Rabba. They now quote a Baraisa, which says, Kriya Shema Kichsava Divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says that when you read Krishna, it has to be exactly the way it's written, which means what? It means it has to be in Hebrew. The only Krishna for which you get credit is if you read it in Hebrew. This is according to Rabbi. Okay? The Chachamim Omrim, but the sages say, Bicholoshe. You're permitted to read the Shema in any language that you understand. If you don't understand Shema Yisrael, then you're permitted to say, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And the Yetzay, with the mitzvah of reciting Krishna. That's the point. Okay? This is how the sages explain it. Alright? So now they want to go over this machloikis, this difference of opinion between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Alright, so they say, first of all, my Tama the Rebbe. Why does Rebbe say what he says? In other words, that it has to be, in Hebrew. So Omar Kroy says, because the text says, V'hoyu, where it says, V'hoyu advorim v'ela. So it means that these words should be, V'havei yosun yehu. They should be exactly the way they are to be found in the Torah, right? In other words, you have to say it in Hebrew. Not allowed to deviate from it. Rabbanan, my tamayu, and as far as the rabbis, what is their reason for saying that the Shema can be recited in any language? So they explain, because Amakra, the Torah says, Shema, hear, v'chol loshen shato shemea, in any language that you can hear. And of course the word hear and understand, you know, are synonyms as far as the word shemea are concerned. Any language you understand, you can read the Shema. Ula Rebbe, Nami Hoksiv Shema. So, what's the matter? Doesn't Rebbe see that the word Shema is also found over there? What does he do with this word? How does he interpret it? So he says, he needs it for a different drash. What is the drash? That's Hashmeya Leyosnecho, Ma Shato Motzim Epicha. Let your ears hear what you utter from your mouth. In other words, according to Rebbe, you have to read the Shema audibly so that your ears can hear what your mouth is saying. Now, of course, there's a profound idea behind that too. The idea being that if you're going to utter words, then you should be concentrating upon what it is that you're saying. I mean, don't make it a meaningless exercise, but hear it in your own mind, in your own heart, and so on, you know, hear what you're saying. This is what he's saying, okay?
To understand.
Yeah, right.
But don't they really extend this time to
of course, but you know, it's based upon this interpretation. Right. Yeah. All right. The Rabbanan, what about the rabbis? You know, how do they understand about, you know, Shema in the sense of, you know, you should hear what you say? So Rabbanan Sabre Lahu, the rabbis of the opinion, Commander Omar, they follow an opinion which has been stated by one of the rabbis, which says the Omar, you know, lo hishmia liyozna yotza, that if a person didn't recite the Shema audibly enough so that his ear could hear it, he still has fulfilled the obligation. Let's say if he would say the Shema so silently without opening his mouth or anything like that. So the opinion is, nevertheless, you have fulfilled the obligation of reciting the Shema, even if your ear doesn't hear it.
Why? Because it's such a trouble to understand it.
Right, right. Because he's still putting his mind to it. This is the idea. Well, the Rabbanon.
Whose opinion is that?
This is the opinion of the Rabbanon, who follow some other authority who says this, okay? Well, the Rabbanon, Name Hoksibahoy. All right, you asked me before about Shema. So now I'll ask you, how about Vihoyu, which, as we said before, Rabbi says it means that you must read it in Hebrew. It has to be exactly the way it is. This is how Rabbi interprets it. So Rabbanan Name Hoksi Vihoyu. Hey, don't the rabbis also, in their version of the Shema, don't they also have the word Vihoyu? So what do they do with it? How do they teach it? How do they explain it? So the answer is, Hahumi Boy Lahu. They require it, Shelo Yikro L'mafreya, that you shouldn't read the Shema in a topsy-turvy manner. In other words, you go with the first paragraph first, the second paragraph second, and the third paragraph third. That's the way you should read the Shema. So this is how they understand the Hoyu. Hoyu means go in the order in which the passages are expected to be read. Okay? So, the Rebbe Shelo Yikro L'mafreya Ben Olei. How about Rebbe? After all, he's also the opinion, you know, that the person should read the Shema in a topsy-turvy fashion, out of order. So, what does he, let's say, what word does he use as a peg in order to, you know, express this particular opinion? Minole, so he says, Nafkele midvorim hadvorim. He derives it by giving a taich of devorim hadvorim. In other words, he says, it could have said, v'hoyu devorim eile, but it says, v'hoyu hadvorim ha'eile. So inasmuch as it stresses upon hadvorim, these words, so it means, don't, you know, change the word order in any way. So this is how he derives it. V'rabbonan devorim hadvorim, le'darshe. The Rabbanan did not need such a drash. They don't accept that particular drash. You see, not everybody accepts a drash. One person can take a drash and interpret one way, and another one can take a drash and interpret for some other reason, you see. So they don't need, you know, the form Hadborim in order to say, you know, in order to derive some lesson or other. Rebbe needed it because he needed it in order to tell us that we're not allowed to recite the Krishma Lamafreya. In other words, to do it in an upside down manner, a topsy turvy fashion. But they don't need this drash. They've already learned it instead, you know, from the Hoyu, whereas Rebbe learns it from Devorim Hadborim. Okay, so they don't need it. Pardon me?
It's a very good machloket.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But as we see, I mean, it's the machlokas which actually stands to us today. I mean, the question is, I mean, should we say Krishna in Hebrew or should we say it in the language that we understand if we don't know the meaning of the Hebrew? You can say the same thing about brachas too. You realize that. And, I mean, normally most of our authorities would paskin that to do it in Hebrew because this is the preferred language of prayer. And anybody who prays in Hebrew, this kavanah is acceptable even if he doesn't know the meaning of each and every word. But there are those, you know, who would say that if you don't understand what you're saying, then do it in whatever language you do understand, because your heart should be speaking to the Rabbeinu Shalom. So it's a very important, you know, it's an important concept for us to mull over, you see. Of course, the ideal is that everybody should learn the language of the prayer book and know what they're saying. No question about that.
In effect, isn't the thought that God doesn't need the prayer, just the person who needs
Of course, of course. This we understand. Yes, you're absolutely right there.
I mean, the prayer is said for the individual, not for the person.
Right, right. But you know, how it comes from us and what our intentions are and so on. Because, after all, again, another aspect of our prayer is that the prayer is not simply that we're praying as individuals, but we're also praying, you know, as members of Klal Yisrael, exactly. Which is another aspect to consider.
It's all in the plural anyway.
Yeah.
Except for the...
Right. All right, let's finish at the bottom, at least a couple of more lines over here. Lameima. So now they say, all right, let's get back to Rebbe. Are we to say the Sova Rebbe? Are we to say that Rebbe was of the opinion that Kol HaTorah Kula B'Kol Loshen Emro, that the entire Torah can be learned in whatever language or recited in whatever language it is? The Salko Datech B'Loshen HaKodesh Emro, the Hoyu, because if we say that the word the Hoyu means that it applies that, you know, the Shema Yisrael has to be in Hebrew, right? The Chos of Rachman, because the Torah is written the Hoyu. So then the implication would be that anything else other than the Kriya Shema, according to Rebbe, maybe can be in any language, whatever. This is what they're asking. So the answer is the rich, we need it, Mishum Dechiv Shema, because it's written Shema. Then of course he uses the Shema in order to get a different version, namely Shema, because he says that means Hashmei Aliyos Nechom, right? In other words, with him, the word Shema means hear what you say. All right. So they ask a similar question, the name of the Savri Rabbonot. Are we to say that the rabbis say, you know, in other words, when the rabbis say that Shema is Becholoshen Shato Shemea, this means that this passage, the Shema Yisrael, is in whatever language you understand. So are we to say then, the Savri Rabbonot, that this Rage said, the Cholatera Kula Beloshen HaKodesh Demro, that any other passage in the entire Torah has to be in Hebrew? So that's the case, you know, if in other words, if you say that the Torah is written in any language, then why would the Torah have to single out the Shema? But to say Shema means the Choloshin Shato Shemaya. So he says, it's derich, I need it. He says, Mishum dichsiv behoyu. The reason being, because it is written behoyu, I have to give a taich according to the rabbis behoyu. And as we saw, how did the rabbis taich behoyu? They taich it as meaning that you should not be korei lemakrei. In other words, don't read in the wrong order. So on. So the question is then, are we correct in our assumptions that either Rebbe thought that any language is okay for Torah except for the Shema, or that the sages thought that only Lashon Kodesh is good for any passage of the Torah with the exception of the Shema, because of Shema?
What was the reason?
Yes.
Again, I'm a little confused.
Why do they mention specifically this word or that word? Okay?
Yes, okay.
So the implication would be that if they mention it, right, then it would imply that in any other case, no. So they say no, because in the final analysis, the reason why is not for that, but for the other drash that we find. You understand? Right. Right. That's for the rabbi. I mean for Rebbe, right? And in the other case, behoyu is interpreted by the rabbis as meaning that you should not be korei lemakrei. Don't read in copy person fashion.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. City. It's about 10 to 9. You want to study a little bit? Or not on that clock. That clock is out. Yeah. Right. Okay. Maybe we'll take a break over here, and we'll continue next week from this point.
Where are we breaking?
2 lines from the bottom.
Well,
we have the two dots over there, right? Okay, so we'll continue from this next week. Okay. I'll tell you, we'll do just one taisvus right now. V'chachomim omim v'chol loshen. Okay? That one little taisvus over there. Omar Ari. So the Ri said, the halacha t'chachomim. He said, the halacha taka follows the chachomim, namely that the Shema can be recited in any language. Why? Because we have a general principle, the halacha k'rebi mechaveiro v'lo mechaveiro. We say that wherever there is a machlokes between Rebbe and one other individual, then the halacha follows Rebbe. But if it is chaveiro, in other words, where, you know, the majority of the rabbis disagree with Rebbe, then in that case the halacha follows the rabbis. Okay? Majority. The oath, and one other proof, he says, the Rabbanan Svira Lehu command the Omar Lo Yishmei Liyaz Lo Yotza, because the sages also followed the opinion that's mentioned in the Gemara Erevin, which says that if he did not hear what he actually said, he still was Yosef. The Chavose Paskin Le Kaman, and that's the way we act Paskin a little further in our learning. Okay, so you don't actually have to recite it so audibly, so aloud that your ears hear it. If you said it, but you know, in a very quiet way, you still yotze with the recital of the Shema. Okay, we shall continue from this point next week in Yotze Hashem. So we'll meet again at 7:30. Thank you. Bakasha.
Yud Gimel,
Amud Aleph,
2 lines from the bottom.
Two lines from the bottom.
See where it says top resh over there? Okay, Ton Rabbanan. Okay. All right. Simply to recapitulate for a couple of moments what we had. The Mishnah, as we saw at the beginning of the second perek, spoke about the first theme, the theme of Kavanah. If you intend, for example, while studying the Shema Yisrael, to use it as the opportunity to fulfill the obligation of reciting Krishna, then in that case we say Yotza. But if not, then in that case the implication is Lo Yotza, even though it doesn't say so specifically. But of course, this now leads us to a much wider area, and that is the question about Kavanah. Intention. Do you want to fulfill a mitzvah at the time, you see, when you are performing the mitzvah? So this is a very big, broad area, and we're going to start with that this evening. Again, we get back again to the theme of Kavanah. All right. And then the next part of the Mishnah speaks about interruptions within either the Shema Yisrael or the brachas that precede it or the brachas that follows it. When is it permitted to interrupt and when can't you interrupt? Question. Can you interrupt just to say, make some remark about the weather or business or something for the next person? Of course, the answer is absolutely not. But the question is whether if you see someone whom either you are afraid of, this is what they mean when they say Mipnei Yiro, or someone that you feel that you owe respect to, you want to honor that person, so can you interrupt or not? And as we saw, there's a difference, first of all, between the two of them. And secondly, we also saw that there is a difference between being the first to say hello and responding to somebody who greets you, okay? And as we saw, and not only that, but there's also a difference of opinion, essentially, between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, in that Rabbi Meir says that if you write in the middle of one of the paragraphs, then in that particular case, you're permitted to interrupt only Mipnei Hayira. But Bein HaProkim, he says, if you want to honor someone, then it is permitted to do so. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is not in disagreement with him as far as the idea of in the middle that you do not interrupt except if they are Yiro, but he does interrupt. He does disagree with him, first of all, as to whether if it's a person whom you want to honor, can you interrupt in the middle of either one of the paragraphs of the Shema, one of the brachas, or not, because Rabbi Meir said that, you know, show Mipnei Hayira Umeshiv. Umeshiv means, again, what? But he's permitted to reply, but what is the implication? Mipnei Hayira. Okay, right, if you're afraid of that person. But Mipnei HaKovid, Rabbi Meir would say, don't interrupt. Whereas Rabbi Huda says that if it is Mipnei HaKovid, you're permitted to reply to someone who has already greeted you first. Without Prokim, if it is, however, at one of the juncture points, as we explained, so in that particular case, there, show him if they have kavod, you are permitted to say hello, permitted to greet this person in whom you want to honor. Well, meishiv shalom cholod, anybody who says hello to you, you're permitted to answer hello to him, bein hapakim.
Between the paragraphs.
Right, right. And then, of course, the Mishnah continues by defining what do they mean by bein hapakim. So the Mishnah then says, elohim bein hapakim, and this is what we mean by bein hapakim. It's first of all ben bracha rishonah lishniyah, between the first bracha and the second bracha of the brachas that precede the krishma, ben shniyah lishma, between the second one and before you begin to say shma yisrael, between shma meaning koshma v'yahafa and the hoyam shemoa, and between the hoyam shemoa and vayomer, and finally between vayomer the emes v'yatzeh. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with this last statement. He says between the third paragraph of the Shema, Niyar Hashem Alekechem, and the word MS, which is the beginning of the next paragraph, we do not interrupt over there. You have to read it in consecutive fashion without interrupting. Okay? So this is what we had so far in the Mishnah. And then Rabbi Yehoshua ben Kocho gives us a philosophical reason, if you wish, why the Shema Yisrael is recited in the order in which it is, the way we say it. In other words, why first Shema Yisrael Yahavta, why then V'hoyem Shemoa, and then finally why do we say Vayomer is the last? When, if we would take a look at the order in which they come in the Torah, Vayomer actually should have been earlier, because it precedes, after all. We know that. Sefer Bamidbor comes before Sefer Devarim. So there must be a special reason why the Shema must be recited in this particular order. Okay? So he explains why the first paragraph, when we say Shema Yisrael, is Kadei Sheyikabel Elov Omaku Shemaim Techila. First, you accept upon yourself the yoke of the kingdom of heaven. In other words, you acknowledge God as your sovereign, and this is the first thing. V'yachakach, after that, then the Kabel Elov El Mitzvos. In the second paragraph, you stress the fact that because we believe in God, therefore we also accept upon ourselves the yoke of performing his commandments, and specifically the commandment, as we pointed out, as Rashi points out, is the commandment of chinuch, education. This is the specific mitzvah which is mentioned in the second paragraph. Okay, and then finally, the question is, how about the third paragraph? Why does it come, last? So the answer is that, granted, it talks about mitzvahs, namely what mitzvah?
Tzitzis,
right. But the mitzvah, tzitzis, as we say, is a mitzvah which is in effect during the day, but it's not in effect at night. Whereas, in other words, Talmud Torah, which is a general commandment, that implies not just educating your children, but it means you should also study yourself. The limaratem, in other words, is interpreted not just the limaratem, which would mean teach, but ulamaratem, understand it also, that it means. And you should learn too, you see. So that it's a twofold process, and inasmuch as Talmud Torah then is a mitzvah that you carry out day and night, therefore it takes precedence over something which is only carried on during the day, namely the mitzvah of tzitzis. So, this is what we learned in the Mishnah, and then as we saw, there was this difference that we had in the Gemara, mentioned about how do we interpret the Shema. First of all, the fact about mitzvahs tzrichos kavona, and this becomes a psak, that mitzvahs do require kavona. However, as I explained to you, and as we learned in Tosfos, there are certain things where, even though you don't have the kavona, but if you perform the mitzvah, you still get credit for doing it, okay? But to begin with, you should have the kavanah. And remember last week I explained the general difference between what we call the chatchilo and bidayevet. The chatchilo, we decided, this means that to begin with, this is the right way to do it. But bidayevet, if you already did something, if we can give you the credit for it, we try to give you the credit for it. And of course, this idea of, lachatchila and bidayevet applies in many, many various areas. In kashrus, for example, this is a problem. Lachatchila, we should be extremely careful about, every single thing. But what if happens, what if it happens that chatz v'sholem, something maybe was questionable? I'm not talking about something which is absolutely wrong, but I'm talking about something that's questionable. Then in that particular case, we examine it and we can see whether, with the evidence, you can find justification for saying, all right, you're okay this time, but next time,
watch out.
Don't. Right, okay. Right. This applies to many, many other areas as well. That lechatchila, you should always try, right? Lechatchila, techila means beginning, so lechatchila, to begin with, you should always try to be very careful about what you're doing. But with the evidence, well, we'll see what we can do. So, the chatchila, you should have kavona when you recite the Shema Yisrael. But, b'diyevet, if you did it without kavona, so we'll see, it's a question, do you have to repeat it or not, or something like that. Alright, then, the Gemara continued, and I'm just summarizing right now what we learned last week in the Gemara, that Rabbi and the Chachomim interpreted the words of the Shema Yisrael in different fashions. Each one looked at it and had a different halakha that they derived from it. Rebbe, for example, takes the word Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel, and he says that whatever you say, that when you say the Shema, you have to be sure that your mouth is conveying the message
to your ear.
To your ear, right. As he says, in other words, he said, Shema, right, you have to be mashmiya li'ozdecha masha ato motzi mepicha, right? That you have to have your ear hear what your mouth is saying. So he says, literally, this is what it means. What did the Chachamim say, however, about Shema Yisrael? They said, Shema, don't take it in the sense of hear, but take it in the sense of understand. I pointed out that many languages, like, for example, French, Spanish, and so on, French, entendre means both to hear and to understand, right? And the same thing, entender in Spanish is the same thing. You say yo entiendo, it either means I hear or it means, I understand, okay? So the same thing, the word Shema in Hebrew can have both ideas. And so, therefore, Shema, they say, Shema b'chol loshen shato shemea. In other words, when you recite Shema, you can recite it, say the Chachomim, in any language which you understand. If you don't understand Hebrew, then you can recite the Shema in English and French and whatever language it may be. This is how they understand it. Of course, as I told you also, when it comes to the halacha that we follow, so there, the Shulchan Aruch, generally speaking, the feeling is as follows. Technically correct that you can say Shema in any language that you understand. But when you're davening with Sibur, you're davening with a community, then in that particular case, it's better to daven in Hebrew. And of course, some say that if you don't daven in Hebrew, then there's no davening, okay? So, I mean, you recognize, I mean, there are different points of view about this particular business, but nevertheless, we feel, I mean, why do we daven in Hebrew?
Lashon Kodesh.
It's Lashon Kodesh, right. And besides that, we have, first of all, the same community, shall we say, of the interest that we share with Jews throughout the world. I mean, you and I know that, well, no matter where we go, if we're in an Orthodox shul, we can fit in and feel perfectly at home over there. I mean, there may be other things. Maybe you don't like how they're talking one to another or something like that. Or there are shuls, right. Or there are shuls where they won't give you the time of the day. They don't recognize you. Whatever it may be. These are problems. I mean, but these are personal problems. The point is, however, that you feel perfectly at home as far as the davening is concerned. All right, I mean, it's true. Sometimes you don't know. Should you say Baruch Shiyomar before Hodu, or should you say Hodu before Baruch Shiyomar? Okay? Should you say Bamim Matlikin, or should you say Kigavna? Okay? These are some differences between the Sahashkana and the Sephard.
But
where
you go, you have to daven the way you
were. Generally speaking, if you're davening as an individual, you have a choice.
You could daven
the way that you're accustomed to, or you could decide that, okay, if I'm davening in this in the shul, I'll follow the ritual completely of what the shul is. They're both correct. However, even if you do your own personal davening and your own, let's say you say, you know, you used to do the Chashidas and you go in, let's say, to Kesef, okay? And you daven the Shmonesra, you know, Allah Nusa Chashidas, which is perfectly proper to do so as an individual, okay? But when it comes to the Kiddusha, right?
Yes.
So in the Kiddusha, you should do what is the Minhag of the Shul. If you are reciting Kaddish, you should do it according to the Minhag of the Shul, okay? Of course, they're also bound to do the same if they come to daven over here. In other words, if they come to say Kaddish over here, then strictly speaking, they shouldn't say V'yatzmach Bukonim, okay? Because this is not our nusach to say V'yatzmach Bukonim. But as I say, this is, you know, this is what it should be. What people sometimes do is not exactly according to what it should be. But I'm talking, you know, right now about what it's theoretically proper. Is the din in this particular case, okay? All right. So, as we see then, the word Shema Yisrael is a point of issue between Rebbe and the Chachamim. This is what we learned last week. Another point of issue between them is, what is the meaning of the Hoyu Hadvarim Ha'ele? What's the problem over there with the Hoyu Hadvarim Ha'ele? Because Rebbe takes it in the sense that the Hoyu means that it must always be exactly the way it is. In other words, if it's exactly the way it is, number one, it means that according to Rebbe, you must say Krishna in Hebrew. Okay?
In its original text.
Right, in the original text, because it's a passage from the Torah, and therefore it should be done exactly the way it is written in the Torah. And this is what he says for Hoyu means. Okay? On the other hand, what did the Chachamim say? So they take the word Bahoyu and they have a different drash. Their drash is that you should not be Korea Lamafreya. What is Korea Lamafreya? It means that you shouldn't read the Shema in any topsy turvy order. In other words, let's say, don't start with Vayomer and then go to Shema Yisrael and Bahoyim Shemoa. And likewise, don't, let's say, start with Bahoyim Shemoa and then take any of the other things. And you have to do it exactly in the order in which the paragraphs, as the rabbis have ordained that the Shema Yisrael should be recited, And so they say, this is what we derive from Bahoyu. Bahoyu means don't do it lemafreya, don't do it in any topsy-turvy fashion. Okay? No. So what about Rebbe? Doesn't he believe in that too? Sure, Rebbe believes in that. But he has a drash. The drash that he gets is from Devorim and Hadvorim. Okay? No, the others don't accept it. Okay? This is what it boils down to. Okay? All right. Now, we continue from the bottom of the page, second line from the bottom. Tana Rabban, another teaching that we have. Whenever you have Tana Rabban, it means that, you know, they find either a Baraisa, in other words, some oral statement that was never accepted in the Mishnah, or maybe a Tosefta that they are quoting. Anyway, they have an oral tradition that was handed down by one of the rabbis, okay? Tana Rabbanan, the Hoyu, Shelo Yikra Lamapriya. Okay, so far this is a repetition of what we said before, that what is the Hoyu Hadvarim Ha'ilah means? It means don't read the Shema in any topsy-turvy fashion, okay? This was stated just a few lines before. But now the question is, what is the meaning of Hadvarim Al-Levavecha? Which means literally, these words upon your heart. Okay, so here we're back again to a discussion of kavana. Gemara starts by asking the following question: it says Yochol tehei kol ha'parsha tzricha kavana. Should we say that this phrase Hadvarim alavavecho means that the entire first parsha, the Shema Yisrael, requires kavana? The Talmud Loma hot eile. So then why does the Torah text say Ho'eila? So on the contrary, we say Ad Kan Tzricha Kavono Mekam Ve'ilachin Tzricha Kavono. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that up to the Hoyu Hadvarim Ho'eila, you require Kavono when you recite the Shema Yisrael. After that, if your mind wanders a little bit, but you're still fulfilling the mitzvah of saying it, you don't require the same type of Kavono. Okay? Take a look at the Tosfos for one moment. What do they mean by Ad Kan? Okay, so Tosfos explains Ad Kan mitzvahs kavona. Okay, he says Ad bechol meodecho. What we mean by Ad Kan is to bechol meodecho. In other words, Shema Yisrael. And the Ahavtas, Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavecha u'nashmal miyodecha, this is where we require the kavana. This is the way we understand the meaning of, you know, what Rabbi Eliezer taught. Okay? Sukim elu mi devorim biyichud Hashem yavosav yirasol. Why do we require these two psukim that they should be recited with kavana? So Tosfos explains, because here is where we are talking in these two verses about, first of all, Yichud Hashem, in other words, the fact that God is one, and we are proclaiming to the entire world, and of course to ourselves as well, right, that we believe in the one God, and also Avoso V'Yiraso, in other words, it's written, thou shalt love the Lord your God, right, V'Yahavta Shem L'Kecho V'Chol Levavecha V'Chol Nafsho Chomiyodecha, which implies you should love God with all your love, and also the Yira, with all your fear, trepidation, awe, whichever word you want to translate, you know, for it. Okay, awe happens to be a very nice word, isn't it? Okay? Mm-hmm. So, love God this way, to Abba and Yira. Okay. Omalei Rabbi Akiva. Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh, the Tosefta? Okay. The Tosefta was a collection of statements made also at the time of the Mishnah by the great Mishnaic authorities, but they were not included in the official version of the